from Los Angeles, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Rocky Chavez, Sherry Beavich Jeffy, Tim Kelly, and a little bit later on, Lowell Ponte. Our program tonight coming to you from our home in Southern California, the Westwood One Studios in Culver City, California, where our toll-free lines are open now at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you would like to email us a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet us a comment or question, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, if you go to our website, beyondthebeltway.com, you'll be able to hear a rebroadcast or a replay of what you are about to hear for the next 2 hours. There's lots to talk about, and we are very pleased to have as one of our guests a gentleman who was on this program about maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago when we came out here. He is a longtime California assemblyman. He goes and serves his constituents in Sacramento. And this past week on Thursday, he announced that he is seeking the Republican nomination for the United States Senate seat held for many, many years by Democrat Barbara Boxer. And he is Rocky Chavez. Rocky, nice to have you with us. And we will get your thoughts on some international affairs and political matters. And that will be a voice that you'll be hearing this evening, as well as our other guests as well. I would like to begin with you, Sherry Beavich Jeffy. You are the analyst. You've been an analyst for a long, long time in this market, working for a variety of stations, also Claremont State, Claremont University. Tell us, from a political standpoint, your immediate reaction when you read the story for the first time about Hillary Clinton and her emails in the New York Times.
I will tell you, Bruce, if you had asked me what my reaction was a month or so ago, I would have said, and I did say, so, but now it has snowballed. Now the whole dynamic has become a part of a pattern of behavior. And I think it could be a very risky situation for Hillary Clinton. I'm not sure that she has handled it quickly, strongly. I know members of the media who are really angry because they looked to being able to gain access to her emails through the Freedom of Information Act, and they're not sure that they can get what they need to get. So my reaction now is, because I was wrong in the beginning to think that this was just a little wrinkle, and it's getting worse for her.
Rocky Chavez, how significant is it that it was the New York Times that broke this story?
Well, I think it's significant the fact that every politician has a responsibility to be transparent to the public. And when you're doing the public business, and that's how we do it, through email, and to have it some way segregated in a private account, you know, politicians don't do that. I mean, you're open to everyone. If you want to go into politics, they're going to read your mail.
Tim Kelly also joins us. Tim, your reaction.
My reaction was that the New York Times waited 2 days after General Petraeus copped a plea for essentially the same thing. Not quite. Well, there was a lot of other stuff going on, but he copped a plea. And the one thing that not too many people talked about that worries me and should worry the president and the people in the White House is that this server in her garage up there in New York. I mean, Uruguay and Thailand could have hacked it. Not to mention you know the big
North
league
Korea.
Countries. Yeah.
So does this, you know, again, when she ran, you know, 7 years ago, I mean, it was ready on day one. This indicates to me she's not ready on day one.
This indicates to a lot of people that she's sort of capable of going rogue, which is not real cool if you're president of the United States. Let me go back to your question quickly about, you know, what is it about the New York Times breaking the story? anybody who could have gotten that story, whether or not they are perceived as a liberal newspaper, whether or not they have been perceived as pro-Clinton, would have gone. I guess somebody there had a better sense of what was big and what was real than I had at that point in time. But I am not surprised it was the New York Times that broke it, because it was a story that was important.
But sometimes, again, people look at, you know, the timing of these scandals, if you will, or issues, if you will. They look and say, "What they are suspect by it." Or many people in the country are suspect of the national news media. And some might be saying, well, you know, the New York Times, yes, they did, begrudgingly. They would say, yes, the New York Times released it, but they released it this point because now she has
early,
because now she has time to clean it up.
But I think that's two different things, sir. There's one thing about sending emails and expressing your thoughts, but the other thing is that they haven't really closed down is the classified information.
Right.
When you're dealing with classified information, that's normally in a separate system. And that's something that she didn't set up. She must have some smart people in there in the State Department that are very aware that you need to have a firewall between classified and then your normal business traffic that you do in an email. Right. If that's crossed, now we're going to have some big problems.
Well, the other thing that concerns me is that, you know, and this has been demonstrated before, you know, when she was surprised by Obama's coming from nowhere to overtake her on the nomination, is whether or not this perceived greatness at politics that she and Bill allegedly have demonstrated once not to be so great, is that she really may have a tin ear. I mean, the fact that this has been out there without her standing up and saying something about it indicates a tin ear. And also, the fact that she has her own staff go through this huge volume, and granted, they did get 55,000, but it just raises the possibility of what wasn't sent. It begs the question, Tim.
It does, and it's surprising. Today and yesterday, the articles came out that the White House has been aware of this since August. And, quote, the president wasn't briefed, but his staff was.
Well, of course, not. He reads it in the newspaper. That's what he's told CBS.
Right, but they were
get a grip on what's happening in your administration.
They were aware of it, but they were afraid to touch it. And they were hoping that the State Department or somebody, so it's quite possible that the New York Times leak, and it wasn't just a minor thing. This was a major story. It could
but the administration was covering it up.
But that doesn't ring true that they didn't know that she had a private account, because whenever I send an email on my state account, it's a rockychavezasm.ca.gov. You see that.
Right.
If you came across an AOL or a Yahoo account or whatever private account you had,
Clinton email. Lights
would have to be going off saying, what are they sending this on?
Right. Yeah. And again, we would assume that some of those emails went directly to the president.
That's exactly right. So the president either is not reading his emails or doesn't understand how the addresses work, which I find.
Well, that was the first thing I saw. Is, I mean, how do you sort of hide, you know, where email is coming from, and for this administration not to know about it? And again, you're saying now they know about it in advance, and the president is on you know, CBS saying that, you know, he was reading about it in the newspapers. And the question was asked legitimately, is that he promised a very transparent, the most transparent administration, and here is his Secretary of State isn't adhering to a dictate of the administration.
Whatever came of using a telephone?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you remember that little thing?
Yes, actually, we're going to try it.
Buttons.
We're going to try it now. 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. What do you think of Hillary Clinton using a private email account while she's Secretary of State? Is this a big deal or not?
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
From Salisbury, North Carolina to Sacramento, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. And Sherry, you were making a point about some comments that are already coming up, because the interesting thing to me from a media perspective is that you have the New York Times, you know, make the charges. They break the story. Traditionally, all members of the mainstream media tend to follow what the New York Times does, and some left
well,
of center,
not all, but many.
Most, but to the general public, at least those that listen to talk radio, the general perception is that liberal columnists look the other way when Democrats do something wrong, and there's already been a fairly significant chorus of what we would describe as what some people would describe as left of center reporters or columnists that are jumping on Hillary Clinton. They can't really avoid this story.
And I don't think they want to avoid this story. You're right. They can't, because the clamor is building. It's a very interesting piece today by Todd Purdom on Politico, in which he calls Hillary Clinton's behavior Nixonian, bordering on paranoia, and compares the email, well, what he called Servergate, with basically the tapes during the Watergate controversy. And people understand that shorthand, true or not. This is not helpful to Hillary Clinton.
Rocky, you announced last week that you want to seek the Republican nomination for the United States Senate. And if you are successful, you're going to be running in this state, a very Democratic state, with possibly, at least at this moment, Hillary Clinton at the top of the ticket, although that may change because of all this, what we're talking about. But whoever the national Republican standard bearer is going to be, it is not likely that anyone is going to put this state in the Republican column in 2016. You are going to be running, if you are successful in your primary, you will be the standard bearer of the Republican Party. What is it that you can say about Hillary Clinton and the National Democratic Party that's going to get you votes, maybe get some independent votes, without being so harsh that you may turn off potential supporters of you in a state where Republicans have not had great success recently statewide?
Well, by the time we get to the general, it'll be 2 years from now, so I don't know if Hillary may not be an afterthought by then. But in clarification, it's not being in the Republican Party nominee. Would actually the California have a top two? So there's going to be a crowded field out there. The top two will go forward. It could be two Republicans or two Democrats. Right now, everybody's kind of thinking it's going to be Harris and myself. But, you know, it's a long way.
Kamala Harris, who is the Democrat Attorney General of the state.
That's right. So it's a long way to that point there. The greatest issue, I think, is what I talked about earlier, is that you need to be very transparent. You need to be open to people. And Republicans need to be very knowledgeable and aware of women's issues, especially equal pay, education, early childhood. They need to be aware of what women are doing. It would not be good for anybody to take a point of attacking women. In fact, today, what is the International Day of Women?
So, International Women's Day.
So the I would not be doing that.
Would you be comfortable in being described as a moderate Republican?
I don't like the word moderate at all. In fact, I was talking to somebody coming up here on that. I'm more of a guy who likes to talk about the issues. And from the issues, define where you're at. And in some circles, people would say I'm uber conservative. But it really depends on what the issue is.
Where would you be uber conservative?
On the foreign affairs. On Second Amendment rights, on no taxes, on smaller government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the points that I've been pretty hard on as far as in that area. So.
Tim, in your view, because you've been involved in Republican politics here, and then we will take calls, how would you describe the candidate, again, who is likely to finish in the top two, And if you finish in the top two, you have a chance of going all the way.
I would think, you know, obviously, there could be wild cards come into the race.
Right.
Plain old numbers.
Plain old numbers. But I see a Northern and Southern California split being more important than party and other. Southern California hasn't had a senator in since Pete Wilson, and that was only briefly. We're where the people are, and we never seem to get a senator. And I think that can be played very, very well. San Francisco is a minuscule, is a small part of it. I mean, I was born there, and it's my ancestral home, but San Francisco is not California anymore.
Sherry, you were shaking your head as he was talking.
Well, first of all,
explain to the audience that the split within this huge state.
Well, it is less of a split than it used to be. And the split has always been more perceived by Northern California than Southern California. What we're seeing now, if you look at the demographics, is that in many cases it's San Francisco and Los Angeles against the rest of the state, against Central California, the Inland Empire.
Which is more conservative?
Without question, more conservative.
And is it more Hispanic?
I don't think it's a whole lot more.
How do you see this state breaking down? Somebody suggested to several months, or last year, I guess, they wanted to divide the state into
six different
states.
Yeah, I met that gentleman at a breakfast one time, and I said, he says, what do you think about that? And I said, I think some guys got together over some scotch and divided the state up. I didn't know he was the guy that did it. That was probably not a smart thing on my part. But, you know, as far as north or south, there is. I mean, just talk about the Giants – Dodger issue.
Yeah,
I mean,
but I'm telling you that they.
But
it's
let me
the
finish,
North
Sherry. But I think the greater issue that people do care about is water. Now you start talking about water and how LA gets water and how Northern California gets water. And you go to the Bay Area, they're all about the Delta. You go down to San Diego, Los Angeles, or in the Valley, they actually need water for their livelihoods, for their industries, for their agriculture. And the North is worried about a smelt. And so. It's a different issue, and we're going to resonate that issue across the state.
But they're not – again, for those listening around the country, it isn't necessarily going to be traditional left-right issues on international affairs or even domestic policy. It is, you know, a vital discussion of the issue of water.
Water and also energy. You know,
and land use.
Land use. This whole issue of about educational institutions. I mean, the Vagar incident that's still going through, you know, that's going to be a foothold that the Republicans.
But that's ideology. That's not geography.
Explain that to us, Sherry.
Well, the courts have ruled against – well, it – tenure has become a civil rights issue, and the courts – teacher tenure – and the courts have ruled that have removed or would like to remove some protection from teachers with regard to tenure. The teachers union are up in arms over it because it means less protection for them. It also means that no longer can – schools abide by the last hired, first fired rule, which has governed tenure and budget issues for a very long time in this state.
But I think if you would actually talk to people, what do you think the role of schools are? It would be education to children. It would not be tenure of teachers.
Of course.
And so that's going to be the issue of Vagara. Right. This week I pushed a bill through to actually – increased the professional development of teachers. Tom Torlakson in a meeting, the superintendent of instruction, said a great idea. And I said, great, Rock. Great, Tom. I hope you'd be supporting it when the bill comes across. We need to give more resources to teachers to be successful because when teachers are successful, then students will learn.
We have callers on the line. Let's go to Brian listening to us on our flagship station, WCGO AM 1590 in Chicago. Go ahead.
Good evening. I was calling in to comment on the Hillary Clinton email situation.
Yes.
And I think it points right to the fact that we're living in the information age, and information is power. And obviously, Team Clinton decided to do this to protect the information and therefore not decrease their power. And I think it also points to the fact that we live in two Americas where the ultra-wealthy and the political elites don't have to abide by rules and laws. They just do whatever they want to, and with their money and their influence, they can affect the media and get the outcomes they want. And I think Hillary Clinton is a terribly flawed candidate. I'm an independent, but I wish the Democratic Party would come up with somebody else to run against Hillary Clinton. I think if the Democrats put her up, they will lose. The only reason we have now is vote for Hillary because she's female. Other than that, she has nothing. And Bill Clinton was a snake who hurt America's working class tremendously. I don't care how you slice it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see somebody else run for the Democratic nomination.
Well, I think the other bigger, broader issue, the question is, and we'll talk about who the options might be. But again, this issue now, the email issue, it resurrects all of the doubt and all of some of the secrecy that surrounds her life, her public life, and Bill Clinton. And it also reinforces, it comes literally weeks after, a short time after, the revelations about the foreign contributions to the Clinton Foundation, which does a lot of good work. But again, this was going on while she's the Secretary of State. How do you draw the line between those? Especially, we're certainly not likely to find it in any emails.
Well, Machiavelli, centuries ago, got it right. He said it was more important to be perceived as being honest than to be honest, no matter whether there was nothing right or wrong.
Do you think she's perceived as being honest?
No, that's my point.
I know.
It doesn't matter.
Perception is reality.
Exactly. And particularly in politics, perception is reality.
1-800-723-8029. 1-800-723-8029. Your reaction to Hillary's private email account and whether or not you think it eliminates her from serious consideration to be the next president of the United States. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for the new Wild Travels series Saturdays at 5:30 and Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
Party in Texas, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, March 3rd through the 22nd. Legends and up-and-comers in concert. Plus, superstar cowboys and cowgirls, blue ribbon livestock and horse shows, western-themed shopping, cool food, acres of carnival rides and games. The Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo.
Party with your boots on.
March 3rd through the 22nd. RodeoHouston.com.
Party with your boots on.
Bruce Dumont back in Culver City. We'll go to calls at 1-800-723-8029 in a moment. First, let's let each of our guests give a brief introduction of who they are and what brought them here today. I don't mean the make of the car, but Sherry, we go back at least 20
yes.
years as a guest on this
Bruce
show. So
brought
nice to
me
see
here
you
today.
You were a high school valedictorian, as I recall,
yes,
when we met.
Just, and that you were 2 years ahead of me, as I recall.
I was the star of the football
team.
Yes,
go
ahead.
I am a very dear friend. I have a very dear friend in Bruce Dumont, and that's the major reason why I am here. I've also been an observer of American and California politics for quite a while. I am the professor of public policy communication at the University of Southern California and the political analyst for NBC4 in L.A.
Tim Kelly, you have been here a couple of times. Tell everybody why you are back.
I'm back because I'm a fourth-generation Californian, and I worked in politics, and then for almost 40 years I worked in direct mail campaign, supplying direct mail to campaigns of both parties. And I'm nowhere in the league of Dr. Sherry, but I've seen a lot of politicians, good ones and bad ones.
And Rocky Chavez.
I'm back here because I enjoyed being here last time with Sherry.
And you were very good. You're all
fun.
Back because you were good the last time you were on the show. But you've got bigger fish to fry. You were here and you did a nice job. But tell everybody a little bit about your background in addition to the fact that you're running for the United States Senate.
Sure. I'm a born and raised in Los Angeles. Went into the Marine Corps in 1973, got out in 2001, 28 years later, retired as a Marine colonel. married, three kids, five grandchildren, happily involved in politics since I left the Corps in 2001. And one of my most exciting jobs I had since I left, I was the Undersecretary, then Acting Secretary for the California Department of Veteran Affairs, representing the 2 million veterans in the state.
Is there political question? This is important around the country because everyone knows, or most people acknowledge, that historically and certainly in presidential elections, the Republican nominee for president has had dwindling support amongst the Hispanic communities of America because of their perceived positions on illegal immigration and crackdown on same. If you end up as one of the top two candidates, Rocky, the national news media will be focused on you like a laser beam because the question will be, can Rocky Chavez, with his brand of politics, and they will identify it as a Republican because you have been elected as a Republican, even though you don't run in this primary as a Republican, you'll be perceived certainly to the right and more Republican than whoever finishes in the first or second position. So my question to you is, are you ready to accept the mantle of defending the Republican Party and talking about the ideals of the Republican Party when some people who have similar historic and heritage as do you, being a Mexican-American, might have a difficult time accepting anyone who looks, talks, or walks like a Republican?
I am a proud Republican, by the way. I don't want to leave anybody not that way. But what we're going to do is we're going to take the center of the state. If it happens to be a lawyer from the Bay Area who's pretty far left, we're going to be in the center of the state on issues on education and jobs and water, and that's how we're going to win the election. Obviously, top of the ticket at the presidential level will be very important. Probably from my selfish concern, I think, and would probably be the best is somebody like Bush. If Bush was actually at the top of the ticket for the Republicans, that would help me significantly. As my family was telling me over the weekend, they said, you know, Dad, if we make it this way, next to the presidential election, the Senate of California will be the second largest election that everybody's going to focus on in
Absolutely.
The nation. And we're going to be running that. And the short answer is, yes, we are going to be proud represent Republicans. But we're also going to be growing the party. We're going to go historically back on what Lincoln recognized, the value of people. And we're going to go back to Roosevelt and the clean environment and protect it. And so we're going to be there.
Is there going to be, in your view, and obviously you've made the decision, is there another Hispanic elected official or non-elected official in the state of California who you think jumps into this race that basically steals some of your thunder and potential vote?
Not from the Republican side. There's a number of names out there in the Democratic side in Orange County and Los Angeles, but I would see that only as a plus. That would actually help me.
Why would it be a plus?
Because it's a top two, and what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to fight amongst themselves the Democratic vote, and they're going to start beating each other up. And I'm going to pull the Republicans. I have always pulled the declined states because of my positions. And I'll get a percentage of the Latino vote because my name is Chavez. So I'm very comfortable. I'll go for it. I hope a Latino from Southern California.
Is that likely to happen in your view, Tim? Congresswoman Chavez. Sanchez, who beat Bob Dorn, and that's her
right.
claim
Loretta
to fame
Sanchez.
To a national audience. And she's on television from time
Loretta
to time.
Loretta Sanchez, I think, would actually end up helping, as you said, because she would be an Hispanic candidate.
Depends
Latino
on
candidate.
The numbers, guys. Don't jump
right.
however, too far ahead.
However, I don't. I want to say my congressman, Adam Schiff, from Southern California. If I was Kamala Harris, I would worry about him because he is very bright, very able, well thought of. I would say he is a moderate liberal Democrat, a liberal Democrat whose feet are on the ground and understands his district.
Do you think he'll run?
There are a lot of people who would like him to run.
Are there other names that we should know and bantee about for those listening around the country who know we're doing this broadcast. We'll be back in Illinois to talk about what's happening in our mayor's race next week. But is there any other name that is out there? Because when we brought this up, when Barbara Boxer announced she wasn't, there was some potential, you know, showbiz stars that might
Frankly haven't heard anything about a possible celebrity candidate. I think many celebrities are very happy earning a lot of money, and they saw what happened to Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they have elected to be major donors and not have to have their head above the parapet right in there to be shot off as a candidate.
By the way, we should mention that Rocky Chavez represents the 76th district that includes Camp Pendleton, Carlsbad, Encinitas, Oceanside, and Vista, and was the vice chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee appointed by Governor Schwarzenegger. Would an endorsement by Arnold Schwarzenegger be a plus or a minus at this point, Rocky?
I think an endorsement by anybody is a plus. unless it's you're really fringe.
The Manson family.
And I wouldn't take the Manson vote. But I mean, unless you're real fringe, people, yeah. The negative point. I think... you win elections by additions, not subtractions. And so the more you can attract people to your message and what you're doing, you win.
When the President of the United States described Kamala Harris, the Attorney General, as the most attractive Attorney General in the United States, is that sort of a kiss of death in a campaign, in your view?
Nah.
Forgotten?
People giggled when he did that. It's not a problem for Kamala Harris. It may be a problem for Barack Obama.
I agree. It's more his problem. His problem.
Let's go to Nate, listening to us on WNTK, and that is in the great state of New Hampshire. Go ahead. Nice to hear. We're a long way from you tonight, but go ahead. You're on the air.
How you doing? I just wanted to make the comment that agree with. I can't remember which one of you guys said it, but when you get an email, it comes right up if it's sent from government or AOL or whatever. And to say that they didn't know, the administration didn't know that she was using private email, it just doesn't make any sense. Do they think people are stupid? Because it comes right up.
Well, I think a lot of people in politics do think people are stupid. In fact, we had an advisor to this president who thought people were stupid, and that's why they were able to pull off the Obamacare bill.
Yeah, I mean, I always voted Democrat, but just because Republicans, I don't agree with the whole abortion thing, and I think gay people should be able to get married if they want to get married. I think, you know, just stay out of people's lives, but I think the Democrats are going to really bankrupt this country, so I'm just going to walk away from them, because I just wish the Republicans would just... not worry so much about abortion. If women want to get abortion, whatever. And let gay people get married. What's the whole deal with that? That's what I just wanted to say, too. Like,
okay.
Why are they so against that?
I just like to comment.
Rocky, respond, because you brought up two issues that Rocky may be asked about, including right now.
The California Republican Party convention last week, probably the most salient issue was the acceptance, actually in chartering, of the log cabin Republicans in the party. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of discussion about this, about their lifestyle and everything, but when the vote came in, it was about 200 to 800 was the vote for acceptance. So
76% of the vote.
So correct. People who are out there looking, thinking, you know, the Republicans are closed-minded, that's more the last decade. We, especially in California, we need to know that we are going to grow the tent. We're going to be more relevant on issues that people care about. He mentioned a little bit about, technology. That's where we're going to go. We're a different party.
And what is your position on illegal immigration?
Illegal immigration needs to be solved. We need to recognize that people are here. They're part of our society. There's an issue called residency. When I lived in Japan, I was not a citizen of Japan. I was a resident there. And we need to do the same thing here. My brother-in-law is from Mexico, and he's been here for, 30, 40 years, and he's a resident, married to my sister, but he's not a citizen. So we need to recognize them, respect them, and as I always talk to my Republican friends, I say, we're a party of families. We should never support programs which send a mother or father away from their child.
1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Culver City, California. Give us a call.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Culver City. Sherry, you were going to make a point about the Republican brand in California.
I think, you know, one of the major obstacles Rocky or any Republican running for any office in the state of California faces is that the Republican brand is defined in Washington. No, California Republicans are different by and large from the national brand, which is sort of very conservative, very harsh, at least in the perception of voters and particularly in the perception of
Latinos. So is the Texas Republican Party different?
Yes, the Texas Republican. But
one wing of the Texas Republican Party.
Rocky's not going to have to face the Texas Republican Party. He's going to have to face the image of the Republican
Rocky,
Party.
You mentioned in the last segment that Governor Bush would be your choice because of his perceived moderation on issues of legal immigration and maybe several other things that you agree with him on. Where would you put Rand Paul as a potential presidential candidate? Do you see things that he would bring to the ticket that could also help you in some way?
Rand Paul's, I think, base is with the young people in technology. I think they're getting excited in the group at the California Republican Convention this week, the most vocal group out there doing everything with the young people. Yep. And so he could, if he could energize that and get them going, that'd be very beneficial.
Where do you come down on Rand Paul as a candidate?
I essentially agree. My daughter and her friends think he's great. And the guys I went to college with, they think he's some kind of a hippie who registered as a Republican.
Well,
he's talking about issues that Republicans traditionally don't talk about. He's doing it in a way, in a tone, with a look that in my view, has a greater ability to expand the base and bring people in who don't vote.
However,
vote for him.
I will tell you, and I think you were there, Rocky, in the not this Republican convention, but the one before. He was the keynote luncheon speaker, Rand Paul. And he received polite applause from the delegates at the convention. And then Representative Kevin McCarthy, the most powerful California Republican in the nation right now, gave a speech, totally red meat, to the base, and they went wild. There was not that kind of support for Rand Paul, who did speak about reaching out to African Americans and Latinos, mm-hmm. who did speak about libertarian issues and philosophy. It didn't work for this audience.
That was more of an establishment audience as well.
Exactly, but they're the people who vote.
Yep.
But the CRP has been changing its personality. I know 10, 11 years ago when I first showed up and I was leaving the Marine Corps, I looked around and I said, wow, you know, this is – you know, there wasn't a lot of color. There weren't a lot of youth. Now you go there, you know, they're dancing at night. It's a different feel. I think when Rand Paul was there, that's when Tim Donnelly was running. He had brought a lot of his supporters there. Mm-hmm. I think that was a different vein there. But
also,
it's changing.
By the way, in your introduction, you did not, even when I asked you to self-identify yourself, you did not identify yourself as a former colonel in the United States Marine Corps, served 28 years in the artillery. And
that's me, right?
No, that was Rocky.
My consultant right now is going to chew me out for you not saying that. He says, let everybody know you're a colonel. Colonel, colonel.
Well, you are a colonel.
I mean, a colonel.
You're a colonel, and you're Hispanic, and you have a 28-year record of serving your country. Let's go to Jim listening to us on WCGO and back in Chicago. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good evening. It's, glad you're still in the Chicago area.
Great.
I was actually calling about the mayoral race in Chicago.
Yes, go ahead.
Because you're going to talk about that. Willie Wilson was one of the candidates that was in the primary, and one of his platforms, besides other pro-growth platforms, was reopening Miggs Airport that was criminally destroyed by Mayor Daley 11 years ago. That airport at the time was probably generating $75, $80 million a year.
Jim, I'm going to interrupt you right now only because it's a little off topic. As I mentioned, we are going to be talking about it in the next several weeks because that race. But I do appreciate your call. We'll pick up on it next week, okay? Let's go to Elton listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, POTUS Channel 124. Go ahead. You're on there, Elton.
Hi. Thank you very much. I appreciate your show.
Thank you.
Regarding Hillary's emails, first of all, anything Clinton seems to lead the headline. My understanding from a number of the POTUS programs today is John Kerry's the first Secretary of State not to use personal email. And Colin Powell was on Meet the Press earlier.
Right.
Said he deleted all of his emails. And so, you know, I just find this, you know, piling on of anything they could possibly find.
Well, again, I think in each of those cases, they weren't necessarily running for President of the United States, though.
I mean, well,
it wouldn't have mattered
whether or not she was running. The reality is it is not something that the Secretary of State should have done. It was against administration policy. She is now maybe running for president, but that's not it. I think that the gentleman has a point in that it has to do with the office, the public trust that you're holding when you hold it. And it is true that Colin Powell had installed in his office a laptop so he could do personal things. But he also used his government, and so did John Kerry.
Also, I was interested in Lindsey Graham, who was on one of the Sunday morning shows today. He admitted that he has never sent an email ever.
I heard him say that, and that was scary.
It was scary.
I mean, one member of his staff just signs it. That's
well,
what
I know,
happens.
But to me, that is a man that's a little out of step with what's happening in the world. But that, to me, that's far more damaging than not
that.
Know how to work the checkout. That tripped up
you
President
bet.
Bush. Anyway, thanks very much for your call, Elton. 1-800-723-8029. We thank you all for being with us in hour number one. We'll be back for hour number two. Tim Kelly, you've got to move on to another engagement, but thank you very much for joining us. In the next hour, we're going to be joined by Lowell Ponte, and he is a columnist for Newsmax and a former talk show host and roving editor of Reader's Digest and author of the book The Great Withdrawal. We'll talk with him after the news. 1-800-723-8029 is the phone number. We will continue with Rocky Chavez and Sherry Bibich Jeffy and your phone calls. I'm Bruce Dumont, live tonight from Culver City, California. From Los Angeles, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by California Assemblyman Rocky Chavez, a candidate for the Republican nomination for the United States Senate, Sherry Bibich Jeffy, a longtime political analyst, and we'll also be joined by Lowell Ponte, columnist for Newsmax, former reporter, talk show host, roving editor of Reader's Digest, and author of the book The Great Withdrawal, our program coming to you from my home base at the Westwood One Studios in beautiful Culver City, California. And it really is a very nice, pleasant town, not literally just about two blocks from where we're doing this broadcast this evening. Our toll-free lines open at 1-800-723-8029. 1-800-723-8029. If you want to email me a comment, Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. And if you want to tweet us a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. In hour number one, we talked about Hillary Clinton and her email mess. And the other big story of last week, there were actually two. One was the president's speech yesterday commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Selma March and the significance of that in our history. And I thought it was another great example of the president really rising to the occasion. I thought the word pictures he painted, the spirit that he used to commemorate that 50th anniversary was quite remarkable. Again, as someone who has criticized the president on foreign affairs from time to time, I wish that that same type of passion and rhetorical skills were apparent or are apparent or would be apparent when he's talking about the United States' role in the world. It just he seems to be a little flat, a little off his game, at least in my opinion, when he's doing that. The other big story last week, of course, was Bibi Netanyahu coming to address the United States Congress, and he made news before he even showed up, and he made even more news when he spoke to the U.S. Congress. And Lowell Ponte has commented on this on many occasions in the past. Lowell Ponte is going to join us for a portion of this program. He is a columnist for Newsmax, as I mentioned. And Mr. Ponte, welcome to Beyond the Beltway. Nice to have you with us.
Hello?
Hello, are you there, Mr. Ponte? Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to say Semper Fi to my assemblyman.
Yeah. Well, Rocky Semper Fi.
who continues to be modest. He never mentioned that he was once upon a time chief of staff of the 4th Marine Division.
That's right.
This is a very talented and skilled person, and I want to salute Sherry as well from my alma mater, the University of Southern California.
Fight on.
Very good. Okay, well, now you...
Let the palm go to him who deserves it. I think that's the last
one. You have already buttered up both of our other guests.
I'm leaving now.
But you've offered comments and shared them with your readers from Newsmax.com, Lowell. And that is the significance of Netanyahu's speech and how that speech played in the United States and around the world. Share that thought with us, if you will.
Oh, well, obviously I admire what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was saying. I remember the first time I was in Israel as a journalist almost 40 years ago, and everyone was saying, if you see a package that's been left on a bus or on a park bench, run to get the authorities immediately, get away from it, it could be a bomb. Back then, we thought, how strange, but in the wake of 9/11, we look at a world and realize we're all Israelis now. And the Prime Minister Netanyahu was, in effect, speaking for all of us about the danger of terrorism as a potential delivery system for nuclear weapons. Also, I was reminded, in Iran, with whom we're negotiating, they have a religious doctrine called al-Takiya, the essence of which is it's okay to sign a false treaty. It's okay to tell lies. It's okay to dissimulate as long as it advances the cause of Islam and protects Muslims. And so why are we negotiating with people for whom lying is just part of their routine doctrine?
How do you respond? And again, I want to get everybody's reaction. In fact, Rocky, I'm going to think I'm going to ask you to respond to this first and then get Lowell and Sherry's point. Netanyahu comes, he makes a very strong case, gives a good speech, a very strong speech about what an evil country Iran is. They can't be trusted. We don't want to have it. We don't want to have this deal with them at all. And he paints this horrible picture of a nuclear Iran and what it might mean to the world and that region and to the future of Israel, which obviously is his primary concern. But then, you know, at this point, while he's giving that speech to Congress, there are reports that are circulating, and they are growing by the last couple days, is that you have Iranian military leaders advising Iraqi fighters and Shiite Shiite militias, and they are showing some significant inroads against ISIS. So here you have Iran that we have just been told is the world's worst country on earth. We have their military leaders helping fight a fight with their troops and their military advisors that is helping at least some advancement of the war against ISIS. How do we deal with that, Rocky? And then I want to get everybody's response to it.
I think you look at the level of threat. When we're looking at foreign affairs, foreign policies, we shouldn't be looking at a particular event. We need to look long-term and what is at the best interest of the United States. nuclear weapons are dangerous. They're game changers. To allow that capability to spread would be a long-term threat to the well-being of the United States. Israel is clearly our regional power there. We need to always stand with Israel, just as we will always stand with the UK. So ISIS, granted they're helping us with that, but the greater threat, and I agree with the Prime Minister, is actually Iran becoming a nuclear country.
Lowell, what's your answer to the question that I asked?
Well, understand, they came into this country in about 1.3 million numbers for a major religious celebration of Shiites that happened around December. A lot of them have never gone home from there. The question now is, yes, they put military forces in Iraq. Are they planning to leave Iraq when this is done? The fear is they're not, that they are simply going to merge the two countries de facto. Iraq already has a majority Shiite population, and so it would be a very natural kind of merger between the two countries. And Iraq may well be looking to Iran as a power that will always be there against situations like dealing with ISIS, a Sunni force. Whereas we, our president says, we're going to stand by you, you should fight for us, and by the way, we're leaving almost immediately. This is not a great way to persuade people to be on your side when you know the enemy will still be there and Iran will still be there.
But should we, at this particular moment, even though let's say we all agree, and not everybody does agree with Benjamin Netanyahu, but at this particular time, should we be cheering those supporters of Iraq and the military involvement of Iran in this particular battle? Aren't they fighting the enemy that we have described as the worst enemy in the world for us at the moment, ISIS?
If you want truly good fighters, what you should be supporting are the Kurds. You should be arming the Kurds. But you remember the great Middle Ages military leader of the Muslims called Saladin. Saladin was a Kurd. It would be far better to stop leaving the Kurds virtually unarmed and give them the capacity to fight than to encourage Iran to come in and establish a large military presence in Iraq.
We have to pause.
How do you do that?
We have to pause. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Netanyahu's speech and also the ramifications of the current involvement of Iran and Iraq. Back shortly.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back in Culver City. Thanks for joining us coast to coast and border to border tonight on Beyond the Beltway. Sherry Bibich, Jeffy, you were about to make a point about the speech, and we'll let you do that right now.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were talking about the content of the speech and support for the speech. And I brought up the point that I think both Representative Boehner and Prime Minister Netanyahu did a disservice to us and to our nation by the process that was used, by Boehner's going around the administration, by Netanyahu not even picking up the phone and saying, even though he and Barack Obama are not best friends forever, hello, Mr. President, I think you need to know I've been invited to address the Congress, and I am going to do it. I mean, it's goes beyond politeness. Go ahead.
But do you believe that Boehner's invitation is part of a long-term strategy by the Republican Party to try to tear Jewish voters away from the Democratic Party. Because there was concern at the beginning of the Barack Obama campaign that Barack Obama was not going to be friendly to Israel.
Or as friendly to Israel as the
Democrat
Israel lobby would like to
have seen
it.
And they have lived to see that come true, have they not?
I'm not at all sure that we can come to any definitive conclusion yet. You know, it used to be there was a political axiom that politics stops at the water's edge.
Right.
And what I see happening now is not positive for anyone. It has become polarized. It has become partisan in its debate, if you will.
But,
and, I'm not sure Boehner is doing it to peel off Jewish votes so much as to define a partisan stance separate from that of the Democrats and separate from that of Obama. And I will tell you why. I mean, I've talked to a lot of younger Jewish activists who are not as firm and as rigid on the question of Israel as their parents and grandparents are.
But I think if you would actually – when you look at the speech, the first 5 minutes of it was Netanyahu, the prime minister – recognizing the president, stating how they've been working together and the support coming from the United States.
And I have a bridge I want to sell you,
but
Rocky.
But I'm telling you, he made a point of doing that in the beginning. And I watched the speech. In the 45 minutes of it, you know, there weren't just the Republicans standing up. There were Democrats standing up. So cheering this on. So I think, yes, foreign affairs needs to be one voice, and it's the executive voice. I agree with that 100%. Additionally, though, Congress does approve the budget, and having the opportunity to listen to a prime minister from a major country.
Yeah,
I'm afraid
I have to disagree with Rocky on this point. I mean, the tradition in the U.S. is if we're going to have a treaty, we have to have advice and consent by the Senate. The Senate is now Republican-controlled. The question then is, the president, so we hear from secondary people all around him, plans to try to create an agreement with Iran that may not even seek the consent of the Senate. It may be called something other than a treaty, but it may compromise America's position. I take it Sherry, too, objected to Mr. Netanyahu, to the president, Mr. Osama, Barack Osama bin Laden, using the British prime minister.
Hussein Obama.
That's true. I take it she objects then to the president using the British prime minister actively lobbying members of Congress in favor of the treaty, but that also implicitly violated this kind of separation of powers and protocol, right?
Well, it was not an official meeting, joint session of the Congress. I mean, if Cameron wanted to go, if Netanyahu wanted to go and say, hey, how are you? I'm coming into your office. I need to give you what I feel. That, I think, is at a different level. It is, again, a matter of perception.
But you would agree, I want to bring in a foreign leader to lobby the Congress.
Did he? I don't know that he said, come on, Cameron, come on and do this job for me. I honestly do not know. I mean, I don't know that you know that that's exactly what happened. But
does everybody at this table believe that the longer we wait in dealing with Iran, the more difficult it will be to stop them from developing a nuclear weapon? Lowell, do you agree with that?
Well,
is this a day-to-day fear that you have?
For example, in Egypt, the president, when the Mubarak government was toppled in the wake of the president's speech there and replaced with the Egyptian Brotherhood, which arguably is an Islamist terrorist-related organization, the president immediately offered them F-15 and F-16 jets. But as soon as that government was toppled by the America-friendly Egyptian military, the president withdrew the offer of jets. I mean, what real policy is he following there? We also have the fascinating world of a President Obama whose idea of governance is to do what he can to take away the right of ordinary Americans to have 22 caliber plinking rifles and 38 handguns, but as Mr. Netanyahu said, appears to be paving the way to Iran acquiring nuclear weapons. And the people of Iran, I think, are a little less stable than the average law-abiding American owning small guns.
If you are elected, Rocky, to the United States Senate, you're one of your main jobs is going to be keeping an eye on Iran. And my question to you is there under any circumstance that you think that they should be allowed to, if they say that they want to develop it for peaceful purposes, is there any way that you would believe them when they said that?
No. They should not be a nuclear power, period. The destabilization of the Middle East is going to be a long-term issue we're going to deal with for decades.
Centuries.
We set up that failure right after the end of the containment theory when the Soviet Union dissolved. We never came through with a foreign policy, and all our actions have been just allow that area to fall apart. That's why you have things like ISIS going. And so no way should we allow a destructive power of a nuclear weapon in their hands.
And how would you and what would you speak out about U.S. policy about fighting ISIS that is different than what the president is doing right now?
As far as fighting ISIS, I think anybody who's willing to take them on, like the King of Jordan is willing to do, let them put their battalions, their people on the ground to do that. We should support them with all the technology we have to ensure that they're successful. This argument that we get in about boots on the ground, I think, cheapens the whole discussion of how the military actually operates. And when do you use military when you have failure of other means for foreign affairs?
Yeah, I'm waiting to see if what we're witnessing is an Iranian onslaught into Iraq. And if we're creating this kind of environment, by the way, you're encouraging nuclear weapon proliferation by Saudi Arabia and others, which may already be happening. And in that kind of situation, imagine a terrorist nuke used on Israel. Do you think Israel is going to just lay down and die quietly if they're pushed to the edge of the sea? No, they have 1,200 nukes or more themselves. And they are going to use them. So letting Iran get nukes is not a path to peace and serenity in the Middle East. And the president has already said through intermediaries he will not allow it to happen. In that case, what does that mean? Is he prepared to preemptively attack Iran? He's already pushed back twice a promised red line for negotiation. He's already continued negotiations after he said negotiations will end on this date.
And what would his response be if Israel unilaterally decided to do that? There's some question as to whether or not how he would react to that.
There are reports that the president purportedly in 2014 threatened Israel quietly, saying, if you send jets against Iran, we may use our military force to stop those jets. Now, that is a truly terrifying thought. Israel, of course, doesn't have enough muscle, short of using nuclear weapons, to be able to stop the whole Iranian program.
Is there any nation in the Middle East that you think should be allowed to have nuclear weapons? You mentioned Saudi Arabia. Is there some Muslim state that should be allowed to have them?
Well, the challenge is most of these Muslim states are kingdoms that are unstable. We just saw Yemen overthrown, for example. Saudi Arabia, apart from its royal family, is always at risk of being overthrown from within or by other means. Therefore, they would acquire the weapons. I'm personally not worried about the Saudi royal family using them. I'm worried about the Saudi royal family being toppled and those weapons falling into the hands of whoever topples them.
Is that something? Do you share that concern as well?
Oh, totally. You look at right now, the only recognized at the UN who have signed on to nuclear weapons and managing them responsibly is what, the United States, Russia, China, France, and the UK. People who have them, that we know that have them, have signed on to all these efforts is Israel, North Korea, India, and Pakistan. This is a big issue. I mean, part of my training when I was in the Marine Corps, I was a nuclear weapons employment training officer. You know, I was an artillery officer. We trained with this stuff. We need to reduce these. We do not need to be increasing the proliferation of nuclear weapons around the country. World.
Yeah, may I ask again, Sherry and Rocky. Rocky is a potential U.S. senator. Do you agree that in the interest of harmony in the United States, that whatever the president does has to be brought to the Senate for ratification?
Yes.
It can't just be rammed through.
I'd have to see what the instrument was, Lowell. I would have to see how he handled it. I mean, he needs to understand the dynamic of debate in this country. if it is a treaty, of course it has to be have the advice and consent of the Senate. What is he talking about? I don't know. Do you know? I haven't seen it. We don't know whether or not it's going to be.
We are a country of checks and balances, and we need to ensure that they're in place.
Lowell Ponte, thank you very much for being with us on this portion of Beyond the Beltway. We appreciate it very much, and we thank you very much. That is Lowell Ponte, and he is author of the book, The Great Withdrawal, How the Progressives' 100-Year Debasement of America and of the Dollar. That's the book. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8289. Back with your calls for Rocky and Sherry when we roll on.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for the new Wild Travels series Saturdays at 5:30 and Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
You're invited to the biggest party in Texas, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. March 3rd through the 22nd, legends and up-and-comers in concert. Plus, superstar cowboys and cowgirls, blue ribbon livestock and horse shows, western-themed shopping, cool food, acres of carnival rides and games. The Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo.
Party with your boots on.
March 3rd through the 22nd, RodeoHouston.com.
Party with your boots on.
Bruce Dumont back in Culver City, California, 1-800-723-8289. We have people standing by. We'll take calls in just a moment. Sherry Beavich Jeffy is here. She is a longtime political analyst working for KNBC-TV, and she's also at the USC Price School of Public Policy. She is a professor of the practice of public policy communications and a frequent guest on this program. California Assemblyman Rocky Chavez is here. He is a Republican from Oceanside, a colonel in the United States Marine Corps for 28 years. Where did you serve, Rocky?
Well, I had the opportunity to serve all around the world. I was in the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th divisions of the Marine Corps.
And countries such as?
Well, the Pacific, everything in the Pacific on ships. I served in both Camp Lejeune and Camp Pendleton and in Hawaii.
Also, he is a former councilman in Oceanside, and then you were Secretary of Veterans Affairs, representing the 76th District at Camp Pendleton, Carlsbad, Encinitas, Oceanside, and Vista, and he was the chairman of the vice chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee, appointed by Arnold Schwarzenegger, former governor, and you were on the Rules, Education, Budget, Health, and Utilities and Commerce Committees. That is in Sacramento, and he wants to be on some of those committees in Washington, because if you did not hear the earlier broadcast, he announced that he is seeking the United States Senate seat once held by Democrat Barbara Boxer, and again in the state of California. When there is a primary, it's the top two. Sometimes they're Democrats, sometimes there's a Republican and a Democrat, and Rocky hopes to be in the top two. And Kamala Harris, let's spend a moment, and then we're going to go to calls. Tell people around the country a little bit about Kamala Harris. She is from San Francisco.
Correct.
So we have somebody from San Francisco, and we have somebody from Carlsbad and their Oceanside, and we may have some people in between. But tell us about her, because the field is being cleared for her. Is that pretty safe to say?
That there are Democratic leaders who are attempting to clear the field, and there doesn't seem to be anyone else at this point in time who is a Democrat who has stated flatly that he or she is running for the Senate. There is there's a sense that the Democratic leaders in San Francisco are very active in trying to clear the field for
what
her.
What is her claim to fame as an elected attorney general, other than this comment that the president made about her, which made her sort of national?
She was the district attorney of the city and county of San Francisco. She won her first election to the statewide office of attorney general against the Republican district attorney of the county of Los Angeles. It was a surprise to many people because she wasn't well known, particularly down south. But again, this was the first time that Steve Cooley, the Republican in a nonpartisan office, district attorney, had to have the R, the Republican identification. by his name. It was a very narrow win. When she ran for re-election in 2014, it was a comfortable lead against a Republican who had no name recognition and no money.
And am I correct? Was she the first person to marry same-sex couples in this state?
Oh, no. That was Gavin Newsom, who was then the mayor of San Francisco.
But when
He's
it became
now
official,
the lieutenant
but when
governor.
It became official, didn't wasn't she involved in that?
When what became official?
When the Supreme Court made its final decision.
Oh, she.
I thought that she was identified in a documentary that's out. I thought she was.
I have no idea whether or not that's the case. It was a Supreme Court decision.
We have callers waiting on the line. They are chomping at the bit. Let's go to Monterey, California. Mark is listening to us on KION. Go ahead.
Hey, Russ, thanks very much. You know, in the first hour of the show, you guys were talking about the political divide in California, and I think Rocky was saying North versus South, but the reality is the way it's shifted over the years is that the real political divide in the state is left-right or east-west. It's coastal California and its values and its ideas against the interior of California.
Okay. No, I think that's what Rocky was saying. I think others were saying that it's a north-south thing, but go ahead.
Rocky was talking about north-south. I was the one who talked about
Nothing more amplifies that than the drought and what is happening to agriculture in this state. And quite frankly, the people on the coast who control the votes and control the legislature are absolutely ignorant about where their food comes from. They don't understand how important it is to have water for agriculture in Central California. And just last week, Felicia Marcus, who's head of, I believe she's with the State Water Resources Control Board, she was talking about the fact she was talking to an urban Californian, and they were railing on about, you know, farmers in California waste all the water and so forth. And she said, well, what do you think is in your food? You know, when you buy vegetables, a large part of your vegetables are water. I mean, water is in the food, and the great challenge that we have, anybody who's involved in agriculture or supports agriculture in this state, the great issue, the challenge is to explain to people on the coast who have the votes that, you know, we need water in interior California so we can produce a safe food supply for not only California but the rest of the
when
nation.
It sounds to me like you're underscoring what was said in the first hour, and that is that the issue that will be a defining issue in the United States Senate is not necessarily Rocky's position on Israel or Iran. These are hometown issues. As someone who listens to this program, and I know you've called before, so you're beyond politically astute. Certainly by listening to this program on a regular basis, but I want to ask you, do you see this, and again, you know, you're not looking Rocky right in the eye, do you see this as a winnable race for a Republican of Rocky's stripe?
I think it is winnable for a Republican of Rocky's stripe, but here's the thing, he has to be flawless. He has to do everything right in the campaign, and he has to have some luck. You know, it's like, Bruce, it's like college football. When the mid-major school plays the school from the SEC, sure, they can win on paper, but if they make any mistakes, it's going to be fatal, and that's what I think it's going to be for Rocky. He's got to run a perfect campaign and really be able to reach out and resonate with voters of all stripes in California. And I mentioned this to Ted, your producer, before I went on the air, that, you know, for the most part in California, we're going to have, here on out, Democratic governors. I would, you know, I don't care if my next governor is a Republican or a Democrat. If it's going to be a Democrat, I'd love to see a Democrat from Fresno or Bakersfield be governor, not a Democrat from San Francisco or L.A.
Okay. Let's let Rocky kind of step up to that, and let me ask a couple of, you know, running a flawless campaign. Few people run a flawless campaign. I think perhaps Barack Obama in 2008, at least on a presidential level, was pretty close to that. But the big question is, this is a huge state, over 20 major media markets. It isn't just New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco. You've got to get the message. How do you go about getting the money necessary? And has there been any signal at all from the Republican Senatorial Committee or anybody back east with some big money that they will help you be competitive with the Democratic nominee or the Democratic candidate?
And the answer is yes. But you're exactly right. The caller that called in is that we do need to run a flawless campaign. This is a large lift. But if we go around the state and talk about things Californians talk about, and you can go to my website, RockyChavezForSenate.com, and I discuss that. You know, this is going to be a race for California. And being a Californian and what I've done, not just locally but also at the statewide, we can win this. And you are exactly right. There is a big movement between East and West. But there also is a spin politically, not that everybody's watching this, politically from North to South. You see that in Sacramento. So those are the divisions we are aware of. We need to know how to talk to them. Now, as far as raising the money, you know, getting through the primary, we get the top two, and then we're going to have to nationalize this race.
Mm-hmm. Give us the time frame on the primary.
You mean when will the primary
yes.
be held?
Mm-hmm.
The primary will be held in June of 2016.
Okay.
I mean,
this is a long way to go.
This is one of the earliest races yeah. I've ever seen since I was watching politics in California.
And
then, of course, the general is in November of 2016.
And when do candidates have to file? What's the last day
can file? The first month, January is the beginning of filing, and you would know what March is the last day.
So you're in this early, and you're in this
year.
For the long roll.
Exactly right, because it's such a large state as you identified. We need to get around the state and build our alliances. It's going to be in agriculture. It's going to be in cattle. It's also going to be in Silicon Valley and jobs. It's going to be about education. We need to hit a lot of the different points across the state, and that's why we're starting so early.
Bonnie, you're listening to us on WCGO, our new affiliate in the great city of Chicago. Go ahead, 1590.
Thanks for taking my call. Colonel Rocky, I want to make a comment about something you said in the last hour, and I hope you win, and I'm going to, you know, rebut something you said, but you can never have that viewpoint that I have because you'll never win the election, but I'm going to make it anyway.
Go ahead. Thank you.
You said you are a family-friendly person, and my children are now taxpayers, and I don't feel that they should have to pay things for people who technically shouldn't be here. Now, when you mentioned about splitting up families and sending, you know, parents back and all that, I just want to remind you that in Illinois, we have a governor who's in jail because he broke the law. And guess what? His children don't get to live in jail with him. So when you break the law, you knowingly take the risk of...
Yeah. Bonnie, we've got to pause. Stay right on the line. We'll let Rocky answer the question, and you can follow up when we come back from Culver City. Bruce Dumont.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
From Lebanon, New Hampshire to Oceanside, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Bonnie had a question for Rocky before the break, and her point was that there are people here who are here illegally, and they are costing taxpayers money. Your response?
2 points. We define society by our laws and how we recognize and respect other people. True, our document system is broken. We need to fix it. But I'm looking at not so much as citizenship, but as residency. And the second point is, as far as the economic argument, there's countless studies out there that show that our economy is supported by the subgroup within our in our country that are not even recognized as being here. And they're paying taxes. They're part of the economy. If we, if all the people who are here that are not recognized left, our whole service industry would fall.
The reform measure that has made it through the Senate that the House refuses to vote on, this comprehensive immigration reform plan, as you have looked at it, do you think it would really work, Rocky? If it became the law of the land, would it work?
I think there's there's components of it would work. I'll give you some examples.
Tell me what would work.
Education for children. It's important that all people here are educated. Otherwise, you'll start having to develop a subclass. So it's important that that they're recognized and they're able to work. I think the issue of residency, knowing who they're here, as far as, for example, driving a car, simple as that. I think that needs to be addressed. We're going to need to look at the whole issue of health care, especially when you start looking at the issues of, you know, measles and people being vaccinated. There's actually a good for society for people, you know, receive some of the basic care for all of us. So border security. I mean, clearly you need to secure a border. That's the only responsible thing any country would do. Especially in
What should we do now that we're not doing just to secure the border, which appears to be sort of the Johnny One note that most Republicans in Congress keep talking about all the time?
Well, actually, we're doing a lot in California. The largest trading partner to California is actually Mexico. And so we're having a lot of manufacturing coming up here. And if you actually look at the immigration rate from Mexico to the United States, it's been zero for the past couple of years.
Yeah.
They're not even coming here because there's more jobs in California. Mexico.
As I look at the legislation again that passed the Senate, still going nowhere in the House, it requires a large number of people who have broken the law come to the United States. They're going to be asked to come out of the shadows, identify themselves to a government entity, be willing to pay a fine, be willing to learn the language, and be willing to go back home and wait in line to come back here again. Now, realistically, will people do that? I'm trying to figure out, in common sense, who is going to do that?
Well, going back clearly is not going to be, get back in line. That's not going to happen. No one would. But it's in the bill at the moment. That's the component that needs to be removed. As we did in California, when we got together in 2012, the assembly to push immigration reform to D.C., I sat down with Latino Caucus and went line by line on what we could agree on. And it was the things I just covered about education, families being together, residency, drivers. Those are the things we were talking about. To expect somebody to self-deport, That's not realistic.
Okay. No, but again,
thank you,
Mitt
Romney.
But what about coming forward and being on a government list and having to pay a fine? Are they going to do that?
I think the fine will be paid because it means that much. But I don't think that these people would even trust us enough and would be very nervous having to go back and wait in line. And I'm not sure that they should have to do that.
I think we have to refine. Everyone has been talking about this comprehensive reform. The president's talking about it. The last president talked about it. They have this plan. They think it's going to be hunky-dory and everything is going to be wonderful. I just don't think it follows the common sense.
I agree.
I don't think it's common sense.
Because
these are – you're asking people to follow a law, a letter – cross the I's, dot the T's to a constituency of people who came here who disregarded the laws. And why would they why would they come out from the shadows to put their name on a government list when a lot of people don't trust the government?
Well, some of them have done that already.
But is this unique that we're seeing in the United States as far as migration? I mean, look what's going on in Europe between Africa. Look what's going in Southeast Asia and Australia. People will go where their opportunities are. It's incumbent upon us to make laws, ensure that we're safe, but also recognize how we can define our society. And that's why I talk about the residency.
Let's go to Jamie listening to us on WCGO in Chicago, our flagship, AM 1590. Go ahead, Jamie. You're on the air. Thanks for watching or standing by.
Hey, thank you. Do you think it would be more accurate rather than, say, to immigrate or illegal immigration, bearing in mind that California, Texas, Arizona, and New Mexico at one time were all called Mexico? Wouldn't it be more accurate to say that they're just coming home to their original lands? And number two, I'd like a comment. With all the bulldozing of homes and property infringement and was a Palestinian-Israeli conflict, 6,000 civilians were killed. Do you think Netanyahu is a warmonger? And I'd love to hear your comments.
We get 10 seconds. Do you think anybody want to agree that he's a warmonger?
I don't think he's a warmonger. No, he isn't. And by the way, I don't know about coming home. I'm very proud to call this the United States.
On that note, we are out of time. Rocky Chavez, thanks very much. She is a candidate for the Republican United States Senate from the great state of California. Sherry Beavis Jeffy, thank you very much. Longtime political analyst. It's always great to be with you. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WCGO AM 1590 in Chicago. Our thanks to Anderson Cowan, Ted Woods, and Colin Bobbitt back home. They all help make this program possible. It's great to be heading home, but it's great to have such great hosts as Westwood One here in Culver City. I'm Bruce Dumont. So long, good night from Culver City, California.